Welcome to the Fuller Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 28th of December, recording at 8:48 p.m. That's Greenwich Mean Time. Now, this being Friday, this is the big picture long-term outlook for the various asset classes, but first a quick look at what's happened this week. For stock markets, they were mostly quiet, with the markets that have been in form all along remaining quite firm, actually rising a little bit this week. And the markets that have been underperforming here for a number of months, certainly during the second half of the year, ranging in fairly aimless or barely steady fashion. Government bonds, these have rallied here again today. The U.S. 30-year Treasury is up nearly a point and a half. And that's the futures, of course. And these bond markets, for the most part, the Western ones at any rate, and also the Japanese JGBs have recouped some of the losses that they had seen last week and earlier in the month. Now, the Japanese bond prices, however, the Australian bond prices remain quite weak. The big story here this week is the weakness of the dollar, which we've seen over the last 3 days, and it's continued in here today. The U.S. dollar index is back down to 76.20. That's down over 400 points today, and that was the breakout point on the upside. We're seeing the euro back at 147.15, the Swiss franc down to 112.72. I'm not going to run through them all, of course, but you get the picture. Now, against that background, precious metals have had a good week here, and gold is at 838.60. That's gold bullion, 838.60 as I speak. Now, that's really within sight of last month's all-time numerical, of course, not inflation-adjusted, but all-time numerical high. Was it even that? Well, I'm not sure. No, I don't think it was. But at any rate, it's within sight of within sight of last month's high, which was just under $846. And platinum gave up a little bit of its recent strength in what's a probable consolidation, that's the only weakness that we've actually seen. Silver has seen a reasonable rally as well. The industrial metals have been a little bit more mixed. And copper, which had an explosive rally last week, has given up a little bit more of those gains in here today. The grains and beans caught a little bit of profit-taking in here today. Well, that spilled over to corn as well, but it's only down 2 3/4 cents. And we had actually seen wheat easing over the last week, and soybeans come down the last couple of days. But those, again, that looks really more like a bit of year-end profit-taking than anything else, because those markets have been in spectacular form for the most part. And crude oil it's actually moved to the minus side here today. Got up as high as 97.92 earlier today, but is currently at 96 16, but not that far off the all-time numerical high. Okay, so what's going on here, and what can we actually expect going forward into next year? Well, the first thing I should say is that, of course, we have one more day of 2007, and that will be Monday, New Year's Eve, and when the markets will be open, although possibly on somewhat shortened trading hours, but both Owen and I will be here commenting on events for you. But I think that the way stock markets, and particularly Wall Street, perform during the first week of January will certainly set a psychological tone for the beginning of the year. A lot of people look for the January effect, and particularly that first week, and if it is strong, they look for a reasonably good year. If it's a down week, then their expectations are pared right back. I wouldn't read too much into all that. Really, what interests me about it, the only thing that interests me about it, is the short to medium term behavioral impact that it might have. As you know, with anything else, some of these historic correlations, sometimes they work, sometimes they don't work. But so I've described it in terms of that may well set the mood for some markets for the early part of the year overall. The more important story, the bigger fundamental story, is the ongoing problem with the Western banks, mainly the U.S. and European banks, with the somewhat bigger problems in the mainly with the U.S. banks. Now, I've written about this again today. I won't repeat everything, but I think it's going to drag on and on. The share prices are depressed, but they're not showing much in the way of upward dynamics. All we can say is that they've lost some downward momentum. Now, that does not make a recovery, though, and the problems are that people are going to be waiting for more adverse news in the form of write-downs and losses. They will fear more dilution coming from the very necessary sovereign wealth fund type buy-ins that we've seen. Now, say those are very necessary, and I think that's good news in terms of the longer term. It is helping to recapitalize these banks, but as I said in touching on this subject, it does represent dilution for initial shareholders, and it's a detriment to other minority shareholders potential minority shareholders who are considering these shares. Also, there are, of course, reports saying that there will be some dividend cuts for Citigroup and the like, and that obviously does remain a risk, although I think the banks would like to avoid that if possible. There are also sales of some divisions within a number of these banks. And while that is helping to raise additional capital, it is also cutting off some future sources of income. So I just think it's going to take a long time. I've said all the while that the convalescence process was likely to be lengthy and to require a base building phase. In terms of the general market indices, the financial sector remains, well, I've described it as the Achilles heel. It's a drag on the indices, hopefully not a millstone around their necks. I maintain that we have certainly seen the major portion of the overall decline by far. Some of these shares may have actually seen their lows, but again, they do need that additional base formation development, and that can be a fairly lengthy process. So while the object of the exercise is to buy low and sell high, and the banks are certainly low, I for one would rather risk missing an opportunity than rush in too early. Now, as far as the US and European stock markets are concerned, concerned generally, the US has this triangular pattern, as you know, very much within a trading range, as are most of the European stock market indices. Investor sentiment is fairly fragile. My own feeling is that we need more central bank activity here to firm up the floor underneath these stock markets within their current current trading ranges. Now, I do expect to see those rate cuts, but as you know, I would have preferred them to come in larger chunks and faster than we have seen to date. I mean, really on the basis that if the Fed's going to be raising cutting interest rates by, let's say, another 75 to 100 basis points during the course of next year, which I think is highly likely, why not bring those forward and cut more rapidly? So I've mentioned before, with my feeling is that the best interest rate policy overall is to, when in tightening mode, to raise them like an escalator. In other words, more gradually, and when cutting them, to cut them like an elevator, fairly sharply. But overall, I think that a number of these stock markets will do well. I'm talking about Europe and the US now, will do well to hold within their current ranges, rather than test the lows and perhaps extend the overall declines. And some will do better than that. Germany, for instance, is right back up there, testing the higher side of its range. And we've got a DAX close here today at 8,067. That's just within a whisker of the all-time high. So some of these, as I say, some of these European indices are considerably steadier overall. But what's doing best? Well, it's the same areas that have done best all along. And these are the ones that interest me by far the most. I personally don't have any investments in the US stock markets, and my European investments are really shares and funds that have almost nothing to do with Europe. In other words, mining companies, gold funds, industrial mining funds, Asian unit trusts and investment trusts, and the like. So my focus remains very much on those areas, the favorite floor money themes, and they are led by Chindia and the leading resources markets. And I think among those resources markets, well, it's hard to beat the BRICS overall. I worry about minority shareholder rights with Russia, and that's kept me out of that market so far, but it has been doing very well recently. Understandably, given the strength of energy prices generally. And of course, investors, I'm not going to be the only investor who will be concerned about minority shareholder rights, but a lot of investors will look at Russia and say, well, I'll take the risk because I like the strong governance that you have, and it seems to be, for the most part, fairly sensible economic governance, at least as far as Russia is concerned. So I mean that's a perfectly valid point. An area of future diversification for me, though, is more likely to be Brazil, because I've got plenty of other types of resources coverage, and Brazil is I think one of the top BRIC picks overall, although I've not got a position there at this stage. China, I think we're obviously still in a consolidation phase, but I do not share the general view, which we've heard for years from some forecasters, that it's all going to unravel. We've certainly got strong economic governance there, and I think it's rather impressive the way the administrators, official monetary officials in China have actually managed this overall stock market recovery and at least partial deflation of the bubble that had formed. I see this as no worse than a medium-term consolidation, and I'm reasonably optimistic that we will see a firm Chinese stock market up through the Olympics and next year, and probably beyond. In terms of the resources markets, it's very much foods that are leading the way, and I think that leading companies involved in the production of foods are probably going to, they're not cheap, but they're probably going to remain a hot area really for quite some time. What else to mention in terms of stock markets? A lot of US investors and UK investors and other European investors who really want to have at least a portion of their investments in their in their domestic markets. Well, I would concentrate on the export economy, on the export companies, not the domestic companies. I would also concentrate on the big cap companies, because I don't think that we have the animal spirits to propel the small cap issues higher at this time. So again, I would concentrate, say, very much on the exporters, the multinationals, and the big cap companies that remain in form. And how do we measure whether or not they remain in form? Turn right to the chart library. They're all there, or if they're not there, send us an email and Owen will add them, as you know, has been happening ever since we've produced the chart library, which must have 16,000-17,000 different instruments in it at this stage. Now, what about government bonds? Well, the rally that we have seen really during the second half of this year for the Western bond markets, in other words, Europe and the USA, but also the Japanese bond market, certainly exceeded my expectations when we began to get that oversold technical rally. But the reason for that, of course, is the credit problems emanating from the subprime related problems that the banks were having. And so we've seen a lot of flight to the so-called quality of these long-dated government bonds, and they will probably remain reasonably steady as long as people are more concerned about slow growth and the risk of recession than they are concerned about inflation. But in terms of actual additional gains from here, we don't get all that much value here. In real terms, inflation-adjusted terms, in other words, a yield of barely more than 4% on the U.S. 10-year treasuries just does not strike me as at all attractive. I mean, for that to be a good investment today, we would have to expect a severe recession in the United States and not that much inflation. But as we know, we do have a fair amount of inflation, but it's almost entirely coming from food prices, energy prices, and in some countries, such as the UK, for instance, unfortunately, we see government services costs. Those have contributed a lot to inflation over the last few years. What we don't have is the wage inflation, and that food and energy inflation is not something that central banks can really combat with monetary policy. I suspect what we'll get is some anti-inflation rhetoric, because their concern, of course, will be that the food price inflation, which is highly emotive, much more so than the energy price inflation, but that will spill over into wage pressure, and that's always a risk. But that risk is highest when economies are strong, not when economies are relatively soft, as we see certainly in the United States and to a lesser extent within Europe. So again, these long-dated government bond markets, I maintain, just don't offer value at today's levels, and they're actually quite risky on a longer term basis, on a medium to longer term basis, because as the banks move beyond these current financial problems, and that will certainly take a while, as I've said before, and as economies begin to gather strength once again, led, of course, by the BRICS action that we're seeing. When that happens, I really think global bond markets will be quite vulnerable. But that's unlikely to be a short-term risk. It is certainly a medium to longer-term risk. And medium-term, by my definition, is anything from a few months to a couple of years. Looking at the precious metal markets, I had a quick flick through some of the charts of gold in various different currencies in the library, and it's an impressive story. When gold got up to that $845, nearly $846 last month, and then commenced a correction, gold shares came thumping down. They're pretty volatile generally. And of course, we had the selling pressure in other stock markets, which worried investors in gold shares as well. Or people just took profits in the gold shares because they had profits in them, and they were faced with problems and problems elsewhere. That's the way markets work. But my point is, if you look at those charts, and you'll see those 10-year charts, you can change that time sequence individually on them if you want, but I like that 10-year picture of gold and other currencies, you'll see that it remains remarkably steady against all but the very strongest of currencies, and it doesn't look bad against any of them. And you see clear overall upward trends. And gold has broken out of a lot of its medium-term trading ranges that we had seen. And the action that we've seen over the last couple of months just looks like a normal consolidation of gains. And why do people buy gold? Well, if you read that Donald Cox report that I posted the other day, well, I agree with him. Sometimes people buy gold as an inflation hedge, and there is sufficient concern about inflation in a number of countries to spur that kind of interest. He also mentioned, of course, that sometimes people buy gold as a hedge against the U.S. dollar, and there's certainly some interest on that basis. And he said sometimes people buy gold because they're concerned about broader issues, which they're concerned about risks that may well weigh on other markets. And we can see why some people would be tempted to buy on that basis. And I would add that people also buy because it's in form. You'll get momentum. Players who will be interested in gold are interested in gold, and there are fewer markets that are in form today than was the case, let's say, a year ago, or even 6 months ago. So I think that tends to work in gold's favor. What about central bank sales? I think we'll certainly see more in 2008, and those will be coming mostly from Europe, I suspect. But we may also see some central bank purchases, given some of the surpluses that exist in some countries. And I think that we will see an increase in just the plain old investment demand in gold. So I expect that high around the 845 to 850 US dollar level to be taken out, but more importantly, I expect gold to move higher against pretty well all currencies. Now, yes, it does suffer from contagion if Wall Street is quite weak. That shouldn't be all that surprising. Gold can't be a hedge against everything. And it's people who buy and sell gold and everything else. So if they're worried about profit erosion or needing to raise cash and other markets are soft, there is a contagion factor there overall. And gold will be prone to these periodic corrections, just like any other market, but all within a good, clear, overall upward trend. And this move on the upside has been led by platinum, and that was extremely important. And we had platinum breaking to new all-time high ground earlier this month. And gold looks set to follow that lead. And I think as interest, you get investors, if they see gold extending a break above that 850 level for more than a day or two, then that's going to attract a lot more interest, whereas platinum is probably more important to the people who actually deal with platinum. And then others like myself, I also have a little bit of platinum, not as much as I had used to have, unfortunately, but I do still have some platinum. And they would be investors who are particularly interested in that sector. But when gold starts to hit new highs and extend that move, that will attract almost certainly widespread interest, and that will also generate interest, increased interest in silver, almost certainly. I see a lot of articles and a lot of points on silver saying, well, people coming up with various reasons why silver is not so good as gold. And, well, everybody has a point, but I think that the crucial factor here is the investment and speculative demand. And if with platinum near its all-time high, currently getting a little bit of a consolidation, but having led the way up once again, and with gold not that far off a upward break in its own right, I think that we'll see the whole sector move higher, and that should also lift the gold shares. And I think it would take a whole lot of contagion from Wall Street to really prevent those moves from occurring. Wall Street, unfortunately, remains a higher risk than any of us would like. But if Wall Street is just ranging, then we will see that higher move in the precious metals. Another reason why a fair number of people have been surprised by this recent strength in gold is that they were extrapolating the dollar rally. Now, you know, I've been saying for a number of weeks that we'd seen the best part of the US dollar's rally overall, and the dollar really has crumbled against a number of currencies here in the last 3 days. And of course, it had fallen back earlier against some of the very strong Asian currencies, if it had rallied at all. It didn't rally against all of those Asian currencies by any means. But my feeling all along has been that we were seeing nothing more than a largely short-covering technical rally. But in the life of Forex traders, and there are plenty of them, as you know, it's a huge market. When you get the short covering, I mean, they're momentum players, and when you get the short covering, then that will also trigger the go long signals. And the best possible indicator of that activity, the only reliable way to measure it, is in terms of what you see and hear on CNBC and Bloomberg TV when the parade of currency commentators comes rolling through. And if they're bullish, they're talking their book, and if they're bearish, they're also talking their book just like everyone else. So you go back to November when the dollar index was down at its lows, and we had a lot of bearish commentary. And if you go back just to earlier this week, we had a lot of bullish commentary, as you're probably well aware, and you've seen it in the articles as well. And I've seen a number of firms picking the dollar as their recovery candidate for the year. And the strongest argument that they can produce to back that view is, of course, purchasing power parity. But if purchasing power parity was everything, then the Zimbabwean dollar would be the strongest currency in the world, rather than a Weimar situation. So that's hardly a timing indicator. And why should the dollar be strong? The U.S. does not need a strong dollar. The U.S. actually needs a weak dollar. The U.S. Will certainly provide plenty of liquidity to try to cushion downside risk for the U.S. economy. And with a weaker economy, it's going to have to produce or print a whole lot of money to cover all those vast expenditures that are taking place in terms of the war in Iraq and Afghanistan and all the overseas bases, all the pork barreling programs that we tend to get during an election year. And well, you can go on and on and on with all the reasons why the dollars in circulation are going to increase rather than actually decrease. And then, of course, the U.S. interest rates are going to come down. So why should anyone go rushing into the dollar with U.S. interest rates falling? And then we also know that the countries with the biggest current account surpluses are saturated in dollars, and they've begun to diversify. They've begun to diversify into other reserve currencies, and they diversify into the sovereign wealth funds, and they may even diversify, albeit only a tiny bit, into gold. But I don't expect any serious demand, any really big demand from central banks for gold, because I just don't think the gold market is big enough to have it to handle it. But I could be wrong on that point. But for sure, it would be difficult to actually persuade the Chinese that they needed to increase their holdings of dollars rather than keep them flat or even reduce them. So again, who's actually going to want to go out and buy all those dollars at this stage? Now, some foreign investors will say, cheap dollar, I can go in and buy U.S. assets at a discount, just like the year-end sales. Well, fair enough. And there will be some demand there, so I don't think it's all going to be a one-way street. I don't expect a dollar collapse, but I wouldn't be the least surprised to see the U.S. dollar go back down and retest its lows against most of the major currencies and also against the dollar index. And I would expect the dollar to continue to weaken in 2008 and beyond against the Asian currencies and a number of the resources currencies. When I say the Asian currencies, I'll go ex-Japan on that, although we'll probably see the dollar weaken against the Japanese yen as well. But the yen is not a strong currency and is unlikely to be one in my view. Not at these interest rates, and not with the Japanese economy relatively soft. What else to mention here? Industrial metals. Now, they are certainly underperforming precious metals at the moment, but I maintain that this is also a secular bull market overall. It's always been part of our script at Fuller Money that we would see very big and lengthy consolidations. And why? Well, because if you get huge gains and there isn't a precious metal that hasn't scored huge gains at one point or another over the last 5 or 6 years, if you get huge gains, then that's going to lead to some big, lengthy corrections overall. But are we going to go into a bear market? Well, I think that would require a global recession. I see no chance of a global recession, barring a ecological disaster of biblical proportions, which I'm not in the business of forecasting. And what we still have is a global economy that remains synchronized in economic expansion, albeit just. And the just factor is, of course, the U.S. economy, which is at best only going to skirt a recession, avoided, in other words, by the narrowest of margins with the help of that overall global economic strength, again led by Chindia and some of the major resources producers. So I think that global infrastructure story that we've talked about so much is going to remain a big factor in 2008 and well beyond. So I think that where we see some very depressed metal markets relative to their highs that we had seen either earlier this year or last year, and they're none more depressed relative to their highs than zinc. And again, zinc was classic example of a spectacular performance on the upside, so it gives up a very big percentage of that move. And from in my opinion, these industrial metals that have taken big hits on the downside, zinc, aluminium, I have to beg your pardon, not aluminium so much, zinc, nickel, and copper, in that order, would be the three that would most spring to mind. These are very likely to experience some significant recoveries during 2008. And what about the supply increases coming from miners? Well, supply is increasing, but it's not really increasing all that much relative to demand, if at all. And some of the credit problems that we're seeing will actually, if they have any impact, will make some of these mining companies even more cautious in terms of ramping up production too quickly. And put yourself in their shoes. You know, your biggest goal is really going to be to get the most amount of revenue from your commodity that you actually can. That's the objective, not to pull out all stops to increase production of the various different metals that you actually mine, to take short-term advantage of the situation and quite possibly weaken the market that you live off of. Now, agricultural commodities, but I'll just touch on crude oil. I think this is certainly very much still in its secular bull market, which, again, I maintain is going to go on for years and years and years. Again, oil is prone to these periodic corrections just like everything else, but it is remarkably steady in here right now, partly due to some political factors overall. I see crude as in a consolidation phase, and there's little doubt in my mind that we will see higher prices next year. Turning to the foods, now this has been the inform sector recently, and I would watch the leaders, the markets that have seen the best moves of all. Two that we could list in that category for certain would be wheat and soybeans. Now, there are genuine fundamental reasons why these markets are so strong, and we have the lowest reserves for many of these agricultural commodities in decades, and we also see rising demand. There's also, and that's coming, of course, from these rapidly developing emerging economies. And there's also speculative interest, partly because they are a momentum play, and also because there are major and justifiable concerns over global warming and over the availability of water. And then there's the whole biofuel demand, which is taking up a certain amount of acreage, and not to mention actual food crops, such as corn with the ethanol production in the United States. So there are strong fundamental factors here, and also a speculative play involved. You know, one of the Fuller Money subscribers who works in Chicago, who has produced some very timely emails from time to time on the whole grain and bean story, had forecast, and I think we go back, I think this was back in November when we posted that email, saying that we would see the U.S. Department of Agricultural and U.S. Department of Agricultural Agriculture would in its January comments on U.S. Crop yields for 2007, and its report on grain stock availability would come in with much more pessimistic figures than its earlier forecasts had suggested. Now, I have no way of knowing whether this will be true or not, but certainly we've seen it's there more than one person holds this view, because we've certainly seen the strength in those grains and beans in recent weeks and months. What will be very interesting to see is how they actually respond to that news, if the view is correct, and that the USDA says that crop yields weren't as high in 2007 as they had previously estimated. Has that all been discounted by the rises that we're currently seeing, or will that spark another round of speculative activity? Certainly the day or two after that announcement, by a day or two after that announcement, we will know. And meanwhile, I'm very happy to have a long position there, protected, of course, with a trailing stop, because that's the only sensible thing to do when markets have been running, as we've seen over the last number of weeks and months. And I think that's pretty much it. Although I'll just mention one last point here. I had an email disaster here today. Not my fault, I don't think, except that my Outlook Express was probably overloaded, since there were a lot of emails showing. But what happened, briefly, is that with the exception of today, everything else, well, I've lost, I suddenly lost my lost about 3 months of data. So from the 27th of December, right on back a couple of months, my emails have been wiped out. Now, what concerns me is what some of you may have sent in terms of articles or questions that had come in during the second half, in other words, from the 15th of December through today. I don't have that material, and I'm very unlikely to be able to recover it. So if there was anything important in there that you wanted me to see, or involved an important question that you had asked, if you can send that again, I would really appreciate it, and then I would be able to read it, of course, and deal with those queries. Otherwise, I'm afraid they're lost. But Last point to mention is that Owen will be back on Monday, and we will be both of us here throughout January and beyond, of course, covering the markets for you on a daily basis. And we look forward to it. Meanwhile, all the very best to all of you.